This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Patrick in the studio. Let's get things going on the Matt McNeil Show. Hey, Matt, how are you doing today?
No problem. Sorry about that. Once again, I am broadcasting from the Palatial McNeil compound. A slight technical issue before we went on the air. So that's why we don't have my delightful opening theme. Dooby 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 dooby. There you go. It's just the same thing. So, but you are hearing me correctly. I'm not just sitting down talking to myself like usual, am I?
I am here.
952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. So, we have a lot to get to today. I want to start off, though, it is Groundhog Day. That little rat bastard once again saw his shadow, so 6 more weeks of winter. Is it 6 more weeks or is it 3 more weeks? It's 6, isn't it?
I think it's 6.
God, man. We used to eat those things too. We used, they got it good now. I think we need to start setting some examples. Apparently, I don't know if you've seen this, but he overwhelmingly picks 6 more weeks of winter as opposed to early spring. Did you know this?
I did not know that.
That it's like he doesn't know weather at all, for God's sakes. Yeah, 6 more weeks of winter, according to the Groundhog Today. And by the way, I will watch tonight Groundhog Day with Bill Murray. I will. That movie is just so good. So well done. That's as good as it gets. So, but needless to say, I will prefer traditional weather forecast methods when it comes down to it to determine whether or not what kind of weather it is. I'm not going for small woodland creatures as my primary method of finding out what kind of forecast is rolling my way. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. I'll start right in on it here. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy has fulfilled his vow to remove Ilhan Omar from the House Foreign Affairs Committee. The House voted 218 to 211 Thursday along partisan lines for a resolution condemning Omar's past statements about Israel and disavowing her from serving on the Foreign Affairs Committee. One of the few Muslims in Congress and a former refugee from Somalia sharply condemned the decision. This debate today is about who gets to be American and what opinions do we get to have? What do we have to be counted as Americans? Omar said on the House floor. What this debate is about, this is about the idea you're suspect if you're an immigrant, if you're from certain parts of the world, in certain skin tone, or a Muslim. The vote was payback, they said, for Democrats removing Marjorie Taylor Greene and Paul Gosar from committees in 2021 over threatening social media posts. Now, I want to start there. This is not equal. They are mad. Now, Ilhan Omar has said some unfortunate things, but the main reason they don't like her is she's a Muslim. She's a black Muslim. She's a black Muslim woman. That is why the Republican Party has labeled her enemy number one. That is why, right there. That is why they hate her with the fire of a million suns, because she is a perfect storm for their hate brigade. The people that vote Republican, a shocking amount that vote Republican because they feel it's the white person party with, you know, white people uber all us, which is, you know, kind of what we're trying to address right now. And that is why she is so hated. What she did was not what Marjorie Taylor Greene or Paul Gosar did. Paul Gosar actually threatened to murder a colleague, sent a threat to murder a colleague. If you're upset, if the Republicans are upset about statements about Israel, then you are doing this. It should be noted, you're doing this to defend Jewish space lasers, Marjorie Taylor Greene herself. Oh, this gazpacho. The gazpacho police came through, and you know what we had today, Patrick? Oh, a delightful lunch. The gazpacho police. Oh, could. Have you had a good gazpacho lately? It's more of a summertime thing, but I mean, it's delicious whenever you can have one, Patrick.
Yeah, it was delicious. I loved having it in that peach tree dish, too.
Oh, the peach tree dish. Oh, yes. A peach tree dish full of gazpacho police. No, they threatened violence against coworkers. Now, in a normal work environment, those people would have been fired. It should be noted, back when they tried to hold Gozar and Green accountable, the vast majority of Republicans, including Kevin McCarthy, said they didn't do anything wrong when they said they were going to murder their coworkers. That is why they were taken off those greens. It wasn't because we just don't like them, which we don't. It was because they threatened violence against coworkers. And still to this day, both of them think that the January 6th mob that attacked the police and the Capitol was just a bunch of harmless, fun-loving guys. Or Antifa, you know, depending on the narrative they want to go with. So when you talk about payback, and I don't like the idea of using the term payback because that's not fair. It's a false equivalent. What the Republicans have done, because they were mad that Marjorie Taylor Greene and Paul Gosar were removed from committees in 2021 because they threatened violence against coworkers in the U.S. House, they basically went out, found their most despised congressperson, the black Muslim woman, and went after her to make themselves feel better. They are not removing her from this committee because she is threatened violence against a coworker. They have not removing her from this committee because she is basically, a threat to democracy. They're removing her from this committee because she's a black Muslim woman that makes them feel better about their pettiness. Which brings up, once again, the larger discussion we need to have today. Man, the Republican Party is going down the racism road. Man, they are going down the racism road. Now, 952-946-6205. I'll come back to the story here in a second. But, Patrick, you do have, we do have some audio from today. Some of the speeches that were backing up Ilhan Omar on the House floor. Let's start off with Cori Bush. This is Congresswoman Cori Bush defending Ilhan Omar before the vote. Go ahead.
St. Louis and I rise in support of Congresswoman Ilhan Omar. I've been to her district. I've spoken with her constituents. We visited marginalized communities globally together. This institution is better because of her leadership, and the Foreign Affairs Committee benefits from her perspective. So let's talk about what's really happening. Republicans are waging a blatantly Islamophobic and racist attack on Congresswoman Omar. And I've said it before, I will say it again. The white supremacy happening is unbelievable. This is despicable. It is Congresswoman Omar who has been harassed at her job for simply existing as a Muslim woman in Congress. It is she who has been attacked by a member of this body, ridiculing her as a potential terrorist for simply existing as a Muslim woman in this Congress. So rather than bring an actual accountability, any accountability to Congress, they bring this offensive resolution to the floor. This is just a bunch of racist gaslighting. We all know it. Vote no.
General Cori Bush there earlier, though, there. Patrick, you let me know when you're ready to play the next one, okay? But once again, the Democrats coming up there and coming on down over and over again coming down and pointing out exactly what this was on this one here. So this next one is Swalwell, who himself has been targeted. This is Swalwell. Calling out the incredible hypocrisy of the Republican Party at this point.
Madam Speaker, when I heard that we're going to remove a member of this House from their committee for anti-Semitism, I raced down here because I thought, finally, in this chamber, there's going to be some accountability from this conference that continues to allow its members to root for rioters, to show sympathy for the insurrection, a conference that harbors a wanted international criminal, and has members who choose violence over voting every single day, finally. And so I thought, we're going to hold someone accountable for anti-Semitism. Surely it's the author of this tweet. Kanye, Elon, Trump, October 6th, written by Chairman Jim Jordan. October 8th, what does Kanye say? I'm going to declare DEFCON 3 on the Jews. So surely this tweet came down, right? Came down, was deleted. No, 2 more months it was kept up. 2 more months. So don't come here looking at us for anti-Semitism. Look in your own damn mirror before you ever come over here. And I yield back.
The gentlewoman from
Pennsylvania. There you go. And once again, Swalwell pointing out that if this is about anti-Semitism, that they're all of a sudden there. Well, Jim Jordan wrote a post praising Kanye West, who then went on one of the largest anti-Semitic rants of all time and left that up for 2 months about that. 2 months. So, yeah, that's not good. And Patrick, let me know when you're ready on the last one here. It, because once again, this is we're just pointing out exactly what this is about. This was not at all like it was when they got Gosar and Green, because they were threatening violence against other members of the House. Threatening violence against other members of the House. This was indeed a completely, this is just, they don't like Ilhan Omar. And that is quite literally what they, you know, they, that's why they went after her. So the most, I think, vibrant speech that came was from Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Patrick, if you are ready with that one, go ahead and play that one as well.
Be nice for 1 minute.
Thank you. Now, as a fellow New Yorker, I think one of the things that we should talk about here is also one of the disgusting legacies after 9/11 has been the targeting and racism against Muslim Americans throughout the United States of America. And this is an extension of that legacy. Consistency, there is nothing consistent with the Republican Party's continued attack, except for the racism and incitement of violence against women of color in this body. I had a member of the Republican caucus threaten my life, and you all and the Republican caucus rewarded him with one of the most prestigious committee assignments in this Congress. Don't tell me this is about consistency. Don't tell me that this is about a condemnation of anti-Semitic remarks when you have a member of the Republican caucus who has talked about Jewish space lasers and an entire amount of tropes and also elevated her to some of the highest committee assignments in this body. This is about targeting women of color in the United States of America. Don't tell me, because I didn't get a single apology when my life was threatened. Thank you.
And you can tell she's a little upset, because once again, she was actually physically threatened with violence by Paul Gosar, and not a single Republican came on out there. But let's go back to the anti-Semitism. We just had a political race in this state where they played an anti-Semitic video for the Republican Secretary of State candidate at the GOP convention, and the GOP went, yay! And only after condemnation started piling up, all of a sudden, oh my gosh, wait a second, that's not who we are. Wait a second, you played it at the convention and you all applauded it. And it should be mentioned that Steve Simon, the current Secretary of State, who did win re-election, Jewish. It was by design. But the crockpot was not the only Republican who has said anti-Semitic things. My God, the party is dripping with anti-Semitism. For them to come on out there and say, well, we're going after her for anti-Semitic comments. My God, man. Your entire party, you have actual Nazis running as Republicans. And at no point does the Republican Party come on and say, you know what? You know, hey, you know, it was a mistake. This person should not have been allowed to run as a Republican. We are rescinding our Republican endorsement. He is not a Republican. He can run as a Nazi Party candidate, but he's not running at the Republican. No! You don't do that. What you do is say, I'm going to look at my feet for a while and pretend I don't hear your question. And part of this is the insanely lame media, that news media that we have, that just doesn't do their job. I mean, this is, you should be asking every Republican, how is it that Paul Gosar needed to be, to get retribution against Ilhan Omar? And reminder, all the Republicans voted to keep Gosar on those committees. So they didn't even vote to, they didn't even vote for any accountability for Gosar. This is, when you look at what is going on here, the Republican Party, I said this yesterday, they're going down a real weird path. And what I think is happening, and someone else brought this up, but I think that this is spot on, as is in the wake of the Roe v. Wade being overturned, that that was their great rallying cry. That even in years where things weren't going well, they'd always just run back to abortion. And now they can't really. They can't. And as a matter of fact, even in states which are very conservative, really, you know, this anti, you know, anti-choice, even in cases of rape and incest or life of the mother stuff, is really dangerous for them. They basically know they don't have a lot of options here. So where are they going? If they've lost their culture war with abortion, it's gone down to very simply, they hate Muslims, they hate black people, and they hate the GLBTQ community. And they are throwing everything at them right now, top to bottom in this party, vilifying these people under the most simple, basic, yep, it's racist, but we know that the base of our party loves it. We know it's bigoted, but the base of our party loves it. We know it's Islamophobic, but the base of our party loves it. And that is where they're at. And this is just the beginning. Now, when I come back, I want to talk a little bit about what the Democrats should do in rebuttal, because this changes a lot of things. And I don't want to hear this, we're going to take the high road crap after the Democrats get punched in the crotch. I want to see some spine, and I want to see some fight, and I want to see some Democrats that are going to go down into that freaking low road and fight. Because if you don't, if you do what you've done for the last 30 freaking years and sat there and said, we're going to act like they don't exist, and I've got a strongly worded memo about Peruvian goats that's going to win the day. And no, it doesn't. You need to get out there and start to freaking fight. And I got the great plan for you if you've got the guts to do it. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Let's take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. I liked it better when you improvise a story we had.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. Chip Roy, a Republican for Texas, likened the Omar vote to a baseball pitcher deliberately throwing the ball at the batter because the other team's pitcher had plunked his teammates. Once again, his teammates threatened to murder the other team's players. She basically said something they didn't like, and that's going to be there. Omar has been the frequent target of bigoted rhetoric from conservatives, including from Republican lawmakers, who says she belongs to the jihad squad and described her as a suicide bomber. She noted on Thursday that Republicans have falsely claimed former Barack Obama was born in Africa and a Muslim. This is exactly what this is about. It should be mentioned that Green and Gosar returned to committees this week. Green immediately used her oversight committee to lament what she called a murder by Capitol Police of a rioter trying to, this is Ashley Babbitt, trying to breach in a room in the Capitol. Murder, no. as a veteran of the U.S. Army, I want to make sure I'm very clear about this. If anyone tries to put a statue of Ashley Babbitt up in the United States, I will go rent a dump truck, put a chain around that damn thing, drag it down, drag it across the city, find a smelter, melt it down, and make, you know, peace signs with it. Something like that. Because she's a traitor to the country. She tried to overthrow the government of the United States of America. And you just say to yourself, oh, he's just talking. Do it. Seriously. Have some public municipal. I'm not talking about someone's private property. That's your right. You can do that if you're a loon ball. That's your right as a loon ball. But if a city or a county or a state puts up a memorial to Ashley Babbitt, I will go rent a dump truck, wrap a chain around it, and drag it down on the first day it's up. Have a nice freaking day. God bless America. That being said, that's who we're talking about. We're talking about the woman who was part of the mob that killed police officers, attacked the police at the Capitol, tried to overthrow the government. They're innocent victims. This is crazy where we've gotten. And by the way, I should mention the I want to make sure this was yesterday. I mean, this is what the Republican Party calls their best and brightest, Marjorie Taylor Greene. She's facing social media mockery for basically a quote here. Now, she asked the U.S. Comptroller General Gene Dodaro how much money meant for COVID-19 relief went to teaching CRT, critical race theory. Now, once again, critical race theory is an optional college class which talks about the history of African Americans and how it's been basically dismissed and demeaned as not really as bad as it was, when the reality is we should be taking a step back and looking at the true history of what happened to the African Americans, Native Americans, Hispanic Americans, all the minority groups in this country. No, that what they're using it for is
it's indoctrination because they're mad that whites were slave owners.
And by the way, that's basically their argument. Sane people are upset today, and sane people are upset today because there were a lot of white slave owners back then. And by the way, then usually comes the delightful discussion of one or two of the slaves loved it. God, that's how they sleep at night. They convince themselves, they find one anomaly in the crowd, and then they basically attribute that one anomaly's characteristics to everybody, and that's how they do it. But this is where she's at. She's out there scolding the U.S. Comptroller General Gene Dodaro about how much money from COVID-19 relief went to CRT. Dodaro asked what CRT meant. She goes, and this just tells you everything about where the Republicans are at today.
It's a racist curriculum used to teach children that somehow their white skin not equal to black skin and other things in education, she said.
Now, it's hilarious to once again just to step back and give everybody the proper perspective of the black history of this country, the Native American history of this country, the Hispanic history of this country, the LGBTQ history of this country, the women's history of this country, to step back and give that in a fair, historically accurate manner
is placing white people below them.
And once again, this is racist, basically insisting equality is somehow favoritism towards the other side. If you just basically teach the history fairly, then it's favoritism. Unbelievable bigots. The Republican Party is the party of, because they don't have anything else to go with. I'll get back to that here in a second. So, you know, Dodaro's like, no, I do not know that. I don't know if there's provisions in the federal funds generally that are not used or supposed to be for curriculum, he said. But Mrs. Green, she was ready to go. I have to tell you, in Illinois, they received $5.1 billion at an elementary school there that used it for equity and diversity. So this is officially Marjorie Taylor Greene in a House committee
talking to the U.S. Comptroller, General Gene Dodaro, insisting an elementary school, one single elementary school in Illinois, got $5 billion just to teach equity and diversity. Sweet Lord, if they do, it did, it would be a worldwide center on equality and diversity if it got $5 billion. Many people jumped on top of it. Chris Murphy, the senator from Connecticut. I agree with Marjorie. It's a mistake that the federal government gave $5 billion to one single elementary school in Illinois to teach students to hate white people. In retrospect, probably $4 billion would have been more than enough. that's pretty sad. Kitzinger, I am still amazed at how dumb Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene is. It's just spectacular. This is them. This is the, I'll tell you what, I'm going to take a break. I'll come on back. I'm going to once again reiterate the problem that the Republican Party has painted themselves into. And because they are betrothed to the lunatic far-right fringe, they are going down a very anti-Christian, hate-filled path that is only going to get worse. Only going to get worse. As a matter of fact, I would not be surprised if in my lifetime we saw burning crosses at Republican Party gatherings. I am not joking, because this is getting scary where this is going. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. I want to once again step back here and track the four different things that got us to this point where the Republican Party is just so betrothed to this extreme far right. And once again, yesterday we had Jeff Stein on the air. Jeff Stein is he prides himself on being a moderate. And he basically, without even hesitating, said, oh yeah, Donald Trump's, by far the front runner in the party. Not because of the political party begging him not to run because they can see that it's just not that popular, but because the base of the Republican Party adores the guy still. But I'll get to that here in a little bit. Four things. One, Newt Gingrich and that rise of the Republican Party in the first years of Trump basically changed out. We talked about this with Dave Durenberger's passing earlier this week. It changed the mentality of Washington, D.C., that no longer did you work with the other side. They were the enemy. They were them. They are not us. It's them or us, and that's just that. And it worked for them because 93, 94, they basically sat there in the minority and screamed, ah, the entire time. And it won for them. Because, frankly, and I'll be blunt, I think the Democratic Party back then just was refusing to see where this was all going. Number two, 2004, George W. Bush, who seems socially moderate comparatively, but he was garbage too. Looking at his reelection campaign, realized that he had alienated the blue-collar workers that had helped him win in 2000. And so Karl Rove and Dick Cheney went on out and recruited the people. Now, and once again, I want to read, Ralph Reed went to George H.W. Bush back in 1992 and told him, bring me in. Let me be part of this. I guarantee you we'll give you the most loyal foot soldiers. George H.W. Bush told them to leave, and they basically said to each other, if we allow that element of this country into the party, we will never get rid of them. Desperate for a win, they went out there. They brought in the racists. They brought in the religious zealots. They brought in the militia guys living on compounds out in Montana. And they brought in basically the worst of the far right America. And they brought them in and they gave them seats at the table. That one decision, indeed, one re-election for W. Bush,
But the impacts to the Republican Party were immediate, because I want to remind people how outrageously incompetent Sarah Palin looked comparatively. We all of a sudden, the far right of the party was like, we're not going to go with any traditional Republicans. We got this one loon ball out in Arizona or Alaska that's going to be fantastic for us. And it was instantaneous. You immediately gave these people a seat at the table, and you are not going to wrestle that away. You gave people who should have never been given power, power. And a million people with a crowbar will not be able to pry their fingers off that brass ring. So, once again, Newt Gingrich was one. The idea of concept of them versus us, which is prevalent in the modern Republican today. Number two, you welcome the loon ball squad in from the extreme far right in 2004. They basically get a seat at the table and immediately change the incredible dynamic, the dynamic of the Republican Party incredibly. Number three was the Democrats just didn't show up in 2010. And that was, and frankly, I want to be clear, it was frustrating to see. At that point, I had just started at AM 950, and there were Democratic leaders who were screaming, like, why would they ever try to pass health care for all? Health care for all is this. And because the Republicans, once again, we're talking about the Democratic Party was just so ill-prepared. They are 20 steps behind the Republicans. And the Republicans go, the second that it got passing, you shouldn't have done that. You shouldn't have done that. And the moderate Democrats go, we should have done that. We are so sorry. And it was hilarious because after the 2010 election, many of those same Democrats, faux pas there, many of those same Democrats came back and were instantly like, I don't know why they weren't running more on the Affordable Care Act. Most people love that piece of legislation. Yeah, you killed yourself. You basically passed what should have been a signature piece of legislation for the next 50 years, and you yourselves didn't even make it last five freaking months because you were convinced by Republicans telling you they're all going to hate you for this. It's like, yeah, they're all going to hate me for this. That was stupid. Nope, that was a lot of Democratic leaders should have never been left in charge because that was stupid. We should apologize. What are you doing? For God's sakes, go get a spine. Then came 2016. And I know this is hard to hear, but it's honest. That has got to be the last time that people in the Democratic Party say, well, my candidate didn't win, so I'm going to send this one out because there's no difference between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. That's what you said. That's what you said. It is. I know it's hard. I know. We've learned our lesson. 2018, 2020, 2022. Democrats are doing better. Thankfully, the younger generation starting to show up to the elections, finally. Thank you, Generation Z. But you can't ever do that again. You can't sit there and say, the person I agree with on 90% of the issues is no better than the guy I agree with on 2% of the issues. That's just stupid. Let me repeat that in case if you can't hear this. That's just stupid. And yeah, I'm still pissed off about it. Because three Supreme Court justices later, here we are. And you go back to 2010, the gerrymandered districts that happened after that election, because it was a census year. And the Democrats basically told Democrats not to vote that year. We're still dealing with the repercussions of that. It's going to take a generational change in the demographics of a lot of these districts for those to finally change. You are looking at the mistake of Democrats not voting at all in 2010 will last with us until 2050. The mistake of Democrats having a fight and deciding to take their toys and go home in 2016 will have repercussions for the next 100 years. The only way you change this is voting every single time Democrat. Vote Democrat every time. I don't care. I don't care. There's one side of crazy loon balls because the Republican Party, because of these gerrymandered districts. Let's run that little scenario, what happened there in 2010 when the Democrats didn't show up. It gave the Republicans such power they were able to gerrymander districts way beyond their wildest dreams. And when you create districts where a radish could run with an R next to its name and it would win by 20 points, what you end up doing is creating an ability for the stupidest, dumbest, most extremist people to be able to get elected and never have to worry about ever getting unelected. Marjorie Taylor Greene. Ta-da! That's how it happened. Newt Gingrich, the 2004, Republicans welcoming the extremist side of the party. 2010, Democrats didn't show up. 2016, Democrats decided to have, to make a false equivalent that Hillary Clinton was no better than Donald Trump. And here's how you get to here. Here's how you get to here. End of story, end of discussion. There's not a real debate here. This is how you get to here. And you will not fix this until every Democrat votes every single election. And the Republicans know this. That is why they are frantically trying to find the next major social issue that they can use to basically, get their base fired up. And you can tell they're a bit lost on this because in the past, when it became to abortion, it was really simple to basically just go, Christianity tells us we shouldn't do this. And you would have a lot of people coming in. And what you've got is for Republicans, there's a lot of really Republican states where the only reason there are a lot of one issue voters that voted only for the abortion. And in their state, abortion's not going to be legal. It's not going to be legal at all. As a matter of fact, you've got Republican attorney generals now saying, don't you dare even send, contraception or abortion pills into our state. Although, funny, quick story. Remember yesterday I talked about how the Republicans in North Dakota are really upset because of interstate commerce laws. And they basically say, you can't go green technology in Minnesota because we need to be able to supply you with our dirtiest coal fossil fuel energy. And they talk about, you can't violate the Interstate Commerce Clause. Funny, all of a sudden, we need to violate the Interstate Commerce Clause to stop anyone from sending medication to people that we don't like that medication. Funny. Can't wait for the Supreme Court to tie themselves into knots to basically say, yeah, you can violate the Interstate Commerce Clause on this one. Yeah, they will. Because we didn't show up in 2016 in the numbers we needed to. Because too many fools thought Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton were the same person. Dear Lord. But here you are. And these Republicans are desperate to find something that keeps that base in the fold. You've got them banning books in Florida. You've got them saying, going very specifically after black studies at high schools and colleges, labeling anything that's a black study CRT, even if it's like just talking about black authors, like a literature class that just focuses on black and black voices. That's CRT. That is what they're doing. It's all about going after black people. It's all about going after Muslims. It's all about going after women. It's all about going after the LGBTQ. They're trying to make it to where it's illegal to be gay in some places. Very Russian-esque. They want to bring back sodomy laws to where they can kick open the door of your house, go up to your bedroom, kick that door open, and arrest you for having sex in a manner that they have not legally cordoned off as legitimate. That is who these people are. Now, I don't think it's going to resonate, but we all should be pretty freaking pissed off because this just outright bigotry and racism is not America. And I understand they lost their big cash cow when they overturned Roe v. Wade, and it hurt them badly in this election cycle. They are all prepared for red wave, red wave. And hey, how's that going in Minnesota? Oh, that's right. Democrats control everything. The reality is this is desperation by the Republicans. Desperation to hold on to power, to hold on to that base that blindly voted for them for years because they just did not like abortion being legal. And now they need to keep them on board without basically bringing abortion into it. That's part of the problem for them, too. They know that basically a strong abortion message is not going to resonate. So where do they go? They attack black people. They attack the LGBTQ community. They attack Muslims. They attack women. That is who they are. And this is only going to get worse. It's only going to get worse because this is all they've got. So it is incredibly important that we do not allow this to just, well, you know, this is the way it is. I personally think there should be daily speeches on the House floor talking about, hey, by the way, here's this person who was at a Nazi rally. Are we going to ban them? No? Okay. And then come back the next day. Here's a person that said Jewish space lasers. You're not going to ban them? All right, you're being inconsistent. Embarrass the crap out of them. And I do have a winning campaign idea for the Democrats, but they've got to have the guts to use it. I'll talk about that when I do come back. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Jim in St. Louis Park, hold on. I'll get your call after the break. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show, 952-946-6205. If Jim in St. Louis Park is still there, let's bring him on in. Thanks for holding, Jim.
Hi. The day that I knew that Keith Ellison was not running for re-election, I joined Ilhan's campaign, and I'm a huge supporter. She's incredible. She's had, I don't know, hundreds, maybe thousands of death threats, and this whole thing makes me sick. It makes me angry. And I'd like to hear a statement from, like, Ron Latz or Shep Harris or Jake Spano, all these people that keep on trying to run somebody to the right of Ilhan Omar, these candidates that are backed by Republicans like Don Samuelson in the last election cycle. And it just, I'm so angry today.
Well, do me a favor, okay? And Jim, thank you very much. You want to be angry at someone today, don't go get your laundry list of people. There's a very short list of people you can get mad at. Kevin McCarthy and the Republicans in the U.S. House. And they're the ones that are doing this today. I get it. You want to air dirty laundry from past things. Fine. That's, you know, you today, this is not about them. That's, you know, the people that you want to go out and attack. It's about the people that basically are going after her today. So let's make sure we focus on this because, you know, frankly, if you're not outraged about what just happened today, I mean, if you're looking at what happened today and you're not fired up, I don't know what to do. Democrats, here's what you need to do. Simple. This is the new Republican standard. If anyone in any political party has threatened violence against another member of the U.S. House or has been part of any Nazi rally or spoken with any Nazi sympathizer, we will not seat them on a committee. This is really simple. I mean, I don't necessarily think what I have just stated is any kind of extremist policy or any kind of really kind of pushing the envelope per se. I think what you've got is a case where you have to start playing at their level. And if it starts looking, I guarantee you, in 2024, when Republicans are looking at the numbers and they're saying, oh my God, we're going to get beat, and you're out there saying, we're going to ban a whole bunch of these guys for getting with Nazis, they're going to be all, well, we just, you know, I don't think that this is necessary there. This is the only way you're going to deal with this. You have to deal with these people like they deal with you. And I can already see, unfortunately, too many Democrats going out there saying, we're going to take the high road. No, just go out there and fight. And say, you know what? I'll do everything in my power. You elect me. I'll do everything in the power when I get to the U.S. House to make sure that anyone that has been pro-Nazi or pro, you know, anti-Semitic, out there, all going out there, I'll take them off the committees. I'll take anyone off these committees that has been threatening violence against other members of the House. And run down the list, because I guarantee you this. As much as they try to you know, go after Ilhan Omar, there's so many of them that are on record. How many of them have spoken at events with actual Nazi sympathizers? I'm sorry, that person shouldn't be part of the Education Committee or the Interior Committee or Environment or Health and Human Services or Transportation or Mining or anything like that. Those people should not be part of those committees until they explain to us how sucking up to Nazis is somehow an admirable trait. If you don't fight back on this, guess what? They're going to do it every single time. And then, once again, Democrats are 20 years behind going, wait a second, they did that again? Gotta get out there and freaking fight. You gotta get out there and freaking fight. By all means. And it, for God's sakes, just do it. We'll take a break, come back, hour two up next. Hour number two of the show on your Thursday. Good to be with you, Matt and Patrick here. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Yeah, I'm more than a little miffed at this whole thing, because it's just going after Ilhan Omar because she's a black Muslim woman. And they can say anything like, and the thing which is crazy is to watch them do it with a smile on their face. Yep, we're racists. What are you going to do about it? And unless America wakes up and basically puts these guys back in the minority, and by a large majority, there's nothing that's going to happen with the Republican Party. That's just not the case. 952-946-6205. Hey, Patrick, did you ever hear a guy named Bob Kroll?
I think I might have heard his name a few times. What has that joker been up to lately?
Lieutenant Bob Kroll, the tough-talking former head of the Minneapolis Police Department Union. Basically, he has taken on a new thing. Now, this is a guy, by the way, who called Attorney General Keith Ellison a terrorist. Wow. Like I said, you wonder where this is when they welcome this stuff into the party. This is where it got on the Republican side. He used a homophobic slur to describe an aide to former Mayor T.I. Ryback, once rocked a white power patch on a motorcycle jacket, and likened Black Lives Matter to a terrorist organization. In early 2020, Kroll appeared on stage in Minneapolis with Trump, the police veteran of 30-plus years, allegedly received a Facebook message calling him a Nazi piece of blank. His full response per the Old City Pages article, keep spewing uninformed blank from your computer in your mom's basement, loser. I hate you. If you hate me so much, why don't you stop by and beat the blank out of me? My bet is it won't happen because you're a cowardly blank. Months later, Kroll. And that's, once again, that's a police union leader. Ha! Yeah, thank God you got paper thin skin, you freaking loser. Months later, Kroll's reaction to the police murder of George Floyd inspired ex-Minneapolis Police Department Chief Jeanne Harteau to call him a disgrace to the badge. Reminder, this is still one of the most surreal things that happened around that whole thing was the implication that Bob Kroll laid out in that letter to the police union membership that he had been working with Paul Gazelka to somehow overthrow the governor. And it sounded like the plan was to install Gazelka as the governor, and I guess Bob Kroll would be the Grand Commandant of Minneapolis and would have ruled the city with an iron fist or something. That's at least the implication that came off that letter. As he sat there and said, the Derek Chauvin didn't do anything wrong. You remember that? And by the way, and people reminded me that apparently Gazelka was on the TV stations talking to saying that he had been trying to call the White House because they wanted Trump to do this. They wanted, and apparently someone in the White House informed them, well, the federal government can't, you know, dethrone a governor and install someone. That's the third world dictator stuff. But that's kind of the implication. At least, I mean, no one's really explained that element of that letter. But Bob, if you want to come on the show and you can explain what exactly you and Paul Gazelka talked about there, because, yeah, that'd be fun. Anywho, but I guess you're not going to happen because you're a cowardly. I'm like, you know how that is. I read that someplace. Anywho, Bob Kroll has reemerged like a groundhog coming out of his dirt hole. Sorry. A hamburger critic for right-wing Alpha News? Apparently so. He is the co-host of Bob and Rob's Burger and Brew Review. In the first episodes, they go to Lexington, Minnesota, and have hamburgers at Cowboy Saloon there. As host, Kroll is far from loquacious. Instead of offering grunt praise of the soft bun and pull tabs at the fantastic place, the fire personality who once called an online singer a cowardly blank appears subdued as he stuffs his face. Goody, meanwhile, his partner, rhapsodizes over the exorbitant establishment with the gusto of someone who may or may not be taking... Pardon, never mind, I can't read that line. To Kroll's credit, he ordered his half-pound Angus burger with the proper medium-rare temperature. Goody dishonorably orders his medium-well. Viewers glean intel about Cowboy's generous drink specials. Burger menu, although we never hear which burgers our critics are munching on. All they do is sleep and eat. Both men are pleasant and complimentary to the staff. And they gave it ratings. Post-meal, Kroll advises viewers, let us know where you want to send us. Don't send us where you'd like to send us. The lawless Mad Maxian streets of Minneapolis. I don't know. Can we send him? Why don't we send him into Minneapolis? Send him into maybe up into the north side of town.
Why don't we send him to Matt's Bar so they can feel not Matt Bar, the 5-8, so they can just feel like they just crossed the line from Richfield and they're safe. It's basically Richfield, but it's Minneapolis. They can pretend.
So there you go. There, he's now a burger reviewer. I don't know if Liz Collin, the former TV news anchor who is Kroll's wife, if she's part of that own thing, but that's their big thing. Truly a horrible human being. I mean, seriously, just a horrible, horrible human being. And it's disturbing that, well, but you know, like I said, it's the right, like now, right now loves the belligerent. They love the belligerent. And so, yep, that's where things are going. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Sad story out of Bloomington today. Three adults were found dead in a truck in Bloomington on Wednesday night, died of apparent gunshot wounds and a suspected murder-suicide, according to police. During a news conference late Thursday morning, Bloomington Police Chief Booker Hodges said two of the men were a father and son. The third individual was a business associate. There is no danger to the public. The three individuals were not from the city of Bloomington and were believed took place where the murder-suicide. Officers were dispatched to a business parking lot near the interchange of France Avenue and Interstate 494 at 8:30 p.m. Wednesday on reports of a truck with someone slumped inside. The Hennepin County Medical Examiner's Office will perform an autopsy to determine the cause of death and the identity of the deceased. No arrests have been made, but the police have stated they're not looking for anyone else who might have been involved at this point. It sounds like, let's see here, it kind of looks like it was on the northeast side of France and 494.
Yeah, where the Smack Shack is there.
Yeah, where the old Fuddruckers, the old Fuddruckers there, yeah. That's where apparently it was there. So, I mean, obviously they've released some information about this case. That, you know, it's a father and son and there's a business associate here. But not much, you know, it's obviously a case that's in the works. And there's going to be obviously more on this to come. So just FYI. But once again, not expecting it. It's expected that there was a suicide involved here. So there's no threat to anyone out there. And a fairly sad story. It'd be interesting to find out where they're from. It doesn't sound like they're from Bloomington. So where they were from as well, it'd be interesting to find out. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. There is a story that was put out there this morning, and it's pretty hard. One of the main faults of privatized healthcare is one simple problem, that you get to a point where the cost is too steep to try to save the person's life. And that's something that's been a pretty standard operating procedure. That is unfortunate. And by the way, this is one of the reasons why the Affordable Care Act was able to get passed, is because the Affordable Care Act, I mean, you had hospitals that were starting to deny lifetime medical coverage to infants because they said the infant was born too fat. Now, I want you to think about that for a second. They were already saying, we're not going to cover that just born baby because we determined that baby's got too much body fat on it. Okie doke. In May 2021, a nurse at United Healthcare called a colleague to share some news about a problem the two had been grappling with for weeks. United provided the health insurance plan for students at Penn State University. It was a large and potentially lucrative account, lots of young, healthy students paying premiums in, not too much huge medical reimbursements going on out. But one student in particular was costing United Healthcare a lot of money. Christopher McNaughton suffered from a crippling case of ulcerative colitis, an ailment that caused him to develop severe arthritis, debilitating diarrhea, numbing fatigue, and life-threatening blood clots. His medical bills were starting to run nearly $2 million a year. United had flagged McNaughton's case as a high-dollar account. And the company, and once again, if you really just care about people, why do you have things like high-dollar accounts? Just aren't you treating people? They flagged it as a high-dollar account. The company was reviewing whether it needed to keep paying for the expensive cocktail of drugs crafted by the Mayo Clinic specialist that had brought McNaughton's disease under control after he'd been through years of misery. On the 2021 call, which was recorded by the company's nurse, Victoria Cavanaugh, she told her colleague that the doctor contracted by United to review the case had concluded that McNaughton's treatment was not medically necessary. Her colleague, Dave Opperman, reacted to the news with a long laugh. "I knew that was coming," says Opperman, who heads up United's subsidiary that brokered the health insurance contract between United and Penn State. "I did too," said Kavanaugh, replied. So once again, we are talking about Victoria Kavanaugh, a nurse that was involved with the Penn State students, and her colleague, Dave Opperman, who basically was the guy that coordinated the contract between United Health Group and Penn State University. Opperman was an insurance broker who works for United Healthcare. Victoria Kavanaugh was a nurse for United. In the recorded phone call from 2021, the two expressed relief the doctors had turned down Penn State student Chris McNaughton's claim as not medically necessary. Opperman was then complained about McNaughton's mother, whom he refers to as this woman, for screaming and yelling and throwing tantrums during calls with United, because heaven forbid she wants her son to be okay. The pair agreed that any appeal of the union's United's doctor's denial of the treatment would be a waste of the family's time and money. "We're still going to say no," said Opperman. "Ha, ha, 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 isn't that great? We're denying life-saving coverage to someone, and they're going to have to suck it up." See, this is what happens when you get into a cocoon of hate. You don't even hear yourself when you sit there and say, as these people, these are people that work in the medical industry. One's a freaking nurse, and they're apparently high-fiving, not because they've actually authorized the treatment to try to help this poor person who's got a lot of problems, but because the company is going to deny trying to help treat this person. Oh my God. More than 200 million Americans are covered by private health insurance, but data from state and federal regulators shows insurers reject about 1 to 7 claims for treatment. 1 in 7 claims for treatment. Many people faced with fighting insurance companies simply give up. One study found that Americans file formal appeals only 0.1% of claims denied by insurers there. The reason why you're hearing about all this is apparently these guys decided to fight back. When United refused to pay for McNaughton's treatment, for that reason, his family did something unusual. They fought back with a lawsuit which uncovered a trove of materials, including internal emails and tape-recorded exchanges among company employees. Those records offered an extraordinary behind-the-scenes look at one of America's leading healthcare insurers relentlessly fought to reduce spending on care, even as profits rose. As United reviews McNaughton's treatment, he and his family were often in the dark about what was happening in their rights. Meanwhile, United employees misrepresented critical findings and ignored warnings from doctors about the risks of altering McNaughton's drug plan. So I'm going to take a break here, but when we come back, just I'll kind of briefly talk about McNaughton, because his case is an extreme case. But we should have a healthcare system that, frankly, takes care of people. That's it. You've been paying your premiums, you paid your things, great, we're going to take care of this, it's done. And the reality is we do not have that. We have a for-profit system that 1 in 7 people basically get told, well, it sucks to be you. This is the reason why we need to have a single-payer system in this country. Because we can't trust the corporate entities to care for the people that they have promised that they will take care of through getting into an agreement with them paying premiums. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. This story about United Health Group is really disturbing. Now, McNaughton and my son's got the same thing. He goes to the University of Minnesota. They've got health insurance for the students that are there. So you go to a university, a major university, usually there's a health insurance plan that covers the students while they're at college. This guy played for Penn State basketball. As a matter of fact, he was a starter. In the winter of 2014, he was halfway through his junior year at Bard College in New York. 6'4" and 12 inches, was a guard on the basketball team. He stayed in most of the team's games since the start of the sophomore year. He's majoring in psychology. When he turned to the school after holiday break, he was starting to experience frequent bouts of diarrhea. Just after a few days on campus, he went home to State College, where doctors diagnosed him with a severe case of ulcerative colitis. Now, let's be very clear here. This is an extreme case. This poor sod, he basically had, a lot of problems here. And so he, you know, it was kind of one of those things where it was, you know, beyond, you know, what you would usually see with this. He ends up eventually going to the Mayo Clinic here in Minnesota, where, and they, by the way, they're the gastroenterologist specialist there, the best on the planet, where they basically, they decide that the best course of treatment for him, which seems to work, is extreme heavy doses of fairly expensive medications. But the medications are working, and it seems to be, is actually being able to, you know, have somewhat of a normal life. McNaughton joined the Penn State student plan in July of 2020 when his infusions that month and the following month were paid for by United. In September, the insurer indicated payment on his claims was pending, something it did for his other claims that came during the rest of the year. McNaughton and his family were worried. They called United to make sure it wasn't a problem. The insurer told them they said that it only needed to check his medical records. When the family called again, United told them it had the documentation needed. They said United, in a court filing last year, said it received two calls from the family and each time indicated that all the necessary medical records had not yet been received. In January 2021, McNaughton received a new explanation of benefits for the prior months. All the claims for his care beginning in September were no longer pending. They were stamped denied. The outstanding bill for his treatment was $807,086. Welcome to the United States. Probably be $20 in Germany. Seriously. In Germany, it would probably be $20. But here in the United States, $807. When McNaughton's mother reached United Customer Service representative the next day, asked why the bills had not been paid in the summer, they were being denied for the fall. The representative told her the account was being reviewed because of the high dollar amounts of the claims. Once again, your job is healthcare. If your goal is profit margins and henceforth denying payments, then that's a problem. They basically went back to Penn State for help. Penn State spokesperson Lisa Powers wrote that supporting the health and well-being of our students is always of primary importance. Hearts go out to any student impacted here. The university, she wrote, does not comment on students' individual circumstances or disclose information on the records. By the way, McNaughton has waived his right to privacy to both United Healthcare and to Penn State. So they can talk about it. Funny story, neither one of these people want to talk anything about it, even though they can legally talk about it. Penn State basically said that they're not going to fight United Health Group on this. During a conference call arranged by Penn State officials on March 5th, United agreed to pay for McNaughton's care through the end of the plan year that August. Penn State immediately notified the family of the wonderful news, also apologizing for the stress it has caused Chris and his family. Behind the scenes, McNaughton's review had gone all the way to the top at United's healthcare division. That McNaughton had been on the treatment for 3 years and had been put his disease in remission with no side effects. The family's relief was short-lived. A month later, United started another review of McNaughton's case overseen by Kavanaugh. This is the nurse that we mentioned earlier on here, Victoria Kavanaugh, to determine if it would pay for the treatment for the upcoming plan year. The nurse sent the McNaughton case to a company called Medical Review Institute of America. Insurers often tour their companies to review coverage decisions like this. Kavanaugh, who was assigned the special investigation unit at United, let her feelings about the matter be known to a recorded phone call with a representative at this agency. The school apparently is a big client of ours. She then shared her opinion on McNaughton's treatment. Really, this is a case, the kid who's getting a drug way too much, like too much of a dose, Kavanaugh said. Once again, now this is not McNaughton's physician. This is just some nurse who's looking at a piece of paper. She said it was insane that they would even think that this is reasonable. And to be honest with you, they're awfully pushy considering what we're paying through the end of the school year. So once again, how dare you take so much medicine and how dare you get upset with us because we're doing a lot better here for you. That's a little disturbing. On a call to an outside contractor, the United nurse complained McNaughton was on a higher dose of a medication than the FDA approved, which is a common practice known as off-label prescribing. They went to a different doctor, a Vikas Pabbi, a gastroenterologist at UCLA Health, professor of the university's medical school. And his May 2021 review of McNaughton's case was just one more of 300 Pabbi did for that company that month. Okay, so I want to stop right there. They have hired this doctor clearly to rubber stamp no, 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 no on these documents for this reason. If he is, I want to make sure we understand this. He's the gastroenterologist at UCLA Health, a professor at the medical school. He's already got to be insanely busy, but apparently he was doing 10 full case reviews a day for United Healthcare. Please. Not only, I wanted you to think, how many cases did this guy review that he actually read anything about the case? He has no time. He was paid $23,000 in total to basically rubber stamp these, but by the sounds of it, to rubber stamp these reports. Pabbi concluded McNaughton's treatment was not medically necessary because United's policies on the two drugs taken by McNaughton did not support them in combination. So once again, does not sound like he called the Mayo Clinic, does not sound like he talked to their doctor. Insurers spell out what services they cover in pen and policies. Lengthy documents can be confusing and difficult to understand. And this, behind the scenes at United, Opperman and Kavanaugh. Now, Opperman was the guy that coordinated between United Health Group and Penn State. Kavanaugh was the nurse that was hired there to review. They agreed that if McNaughton were to appeal Pabbi's decision, the doctor who reviewed it at UCLA, the insurer would simply rule against him. I just think it's a waste of money and time to appeal and send it to another one when we know we're going to get the same answer, Opperman said, according to the recording of the court files. So once again, they're admitting there's no point in appeal because they will not pay attention. They've already denied you. There's no point in the appeal. This is United Health Group. Opperman's urging, United decided to skip the usual appeals process, arrange for Pabbi to have a so-called peer-to-peer discussion with Loftus, the Mayo physician treating McNaughton. Such a conversation and what, now this is once again, he's already rubber stamped that this was not going to happen. But then they decided, okay, maybe he should talk to him. Such a conversation in which the patient's doctor talks with an insurance company's doctor to advocate for the prescribed treatment usually only occurs after a customer has appealed a denial and the appeal has been rejected. When Kavanaugh called Loftus's office to set up a conversation with Pabbi, she explained it was an urgent matter and been requested by McNaughton. All right, so she lied. She called up Loftus's office, and so she basically presented that she was on advocating for the patient, not the company. You know, I've just gotten to know Christopher, she explained, although she had never spoken with him. We're just trying to advocate and help in this peer-to-peer setup. What a piece of crap this woman is. McNaughton, meanwhile, had no idea at the time that the United doctor had decided his treatment was unnecessary and the insurer was trying to set up a phone call with the physician. In the peer-to-peer conversation, Loftus told Pabbi that McNaughton had a very complicated case and that lower doses had not worked for him, according to the internal memo. So basically, the doctor at the Mayo says, no, we're trying to save this kid. Following his conversation with Loftus, Pabbi created a second report for United. He recommended the insurance pay for both drugs, but at reduced doses, going against what the actual doctor said. He added new language saying the safety of using both drugs at the higher levels was not established. When Kavanaugh shared the May 12th decision with Pabbi with others at United, her boss responded with an email saying, great news. Then Opperman sent the email that puzzled McNaughton's. In it, Opperman claimed, It refreshed on me here. Opperman claimed that Loftus and Pabbi had agreed that McNaughton should be on significantly lower doses for both drugs. So no, once again, what Opperman just told them is that Loftus agreed with Pabby's decision. So they misrepresented themselves to Loftus. Then they misrepresented what Loftus said to the McNaughtons. He would said Loftus will work with the patient to start, getting weaning them down or reducing the dosage to a normal dose range. United would cover McNaughton's treatment in the coming year, but only the reduced cost. McNaughton did not believe a word of it. It was Loftus who upped the doses on this case. The only thing that made sense to McNaughton was that the treatment United said would now pay for was now dramatically cheaper. When the family contacted Loftus, this is the doctor up at Mayo, for the explanation, they were outraged by what they heard. Loftus told them that he had never recommended lowering the dosage. In the letter, Loftus wrote that changing McNaughton's treatment would have serious detrimental effects on both his short-term and long-term health and could potentially involve life-threatening complications. Chris was on the dose suggested by United Healthcare before, and they were not at all effective. It would not be until the lawsuit that it would become clear how Loftus's conversations had been so seriously misrepresented. Under questioning by McNaughton's lawyers, Kavanaugh, the nurse, acknowledged she was the source of the incorrect claim that McNaughton's doctor had agreed to change the treatment. I incorrectly made the assumption that they'd come to some sort of agreement. It was my first peer-to-peer. Well, you're an ass. Kavanaugh did not respond to emails and telephone messages seeking comment. When McNaughton first learned of Opperman's inaccurate report, the phone calls with Loftus hit and unnerved them. They started questioning their case would be fairly reviewed. They basically then had a report. They sent this is a case to Dr. Nady Cates. An additional review. The review marked escalated issue. Cates is a United Medical doctor, the title used by many insurers for physicians who review cases. It is work that he's been doing as an employee. Cates, in a deposition, said he stopped seeing patients because of long hours involved and because AIDS was coming around them. I was seeing a lot of military folks who had venereal diseases. Okay, whatever that is. He said his review of McDonald's case primarily involved reading a United Nurses recommendation to deny the care and making sure that there wasn't a decimal place that had been out of line. He said he copy and pasted the nurse's recommendation and typed agree on his review of the Naughton case. In the deposition, Cates tells McNaughton's lawyer that he copied and recommended the recommendation, a nurse at United, rather, in writing his own decision. Cates said that he does that about 100 reviews a week. He said this is reviews he typically checks to see if medications are prescribed and the coordinates there. You're giving zero weight to treating doctor's opinion on the treatment regimen, the lawyer asked Cates. In the deposition, he responded yes. You couldn't get in touch with Cates. He didn't want to talk either. This is the next one. Dr. Nitin Kumar, a gastroenterologist in Illinois, concluded that McNaughton's established treatment plan was not only medically necessary and appropriate, but lowering his doses could result in a lack of effective therapy. Unlike other doctors who produce reports for United, Kumar discussed the harm that McNaughton might suffer. So he put this point out there. When Kavanaugh learned of Kumar's report, she quickly moved to quash it to get the case returned to PABI, according to the deposition. So even when their own internal doctor said, no, this is legit, they basically tried to kill it. Yeah, this is pretty embarrassing, United Healthcare. This is pretty embarrassing because we get the inner workings here that you've got a bunch of rubber stamp doctors who do not really review these cases that basically are only there to try to save United Health Group a lot of money. And the people that do not get your undivided attention are the sick people who clearly need the help. This is disturbing. There's a lot to this story. It's a ProPublica story. But this is, once again, if you're wondering why we still need to get single-payer health care, it's stuff like this. Because the cost of it should never be the reason why someone is denied health care. That clearly is the only thing that seemed to matter in this case to United Healthcare. And God, the lies, dear Lord. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break, come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota, a direct line to Patrick. Patrick, when you get the chance, get ready to pull up. Dean Phillips has a pretty good speech where he kind of throws some things back at Marjorie Taylor Greene. I got it on the Twitter feed there, so if you can find that there.
You know, it's and get ready to play that here in a second. Let me know when you got that. The one of the things, by the way, it shouldn't be mentioned, that report, by the way, that United Health Group had that showed that no, the medication was needed. The United Healthcare buried the report. And it wasn't until someone started reviewing the audio tapes, because that nurse had mentioned the report in one of them, that all of a sudden they became aware of the report. And, here's that report. Here you go. Here's what you need. There it is. Boy, I bet you're glad we found that. Anyway, going back to the main story we had, we talked about the last hour, is the racism and bigotry that's starting to just really become the identifying factor of the standard Republican. We played a few of the videos earlier, Cori Bush, as well as Swalwell and AOC. But here is Dean Phillips standing up to defend Ilhan Omar and defending her this morning on the vote.
I now yield 3 minutes to Representative Dean Phillips of Minnesota, also a member of the House Foreign Affairs Committee.
The gentleman is recognized for 3 minutes.
Thank you. Ilhan Omar and I are products of remarkably different life experiences. Hers began by fleeing civil war in Somalia before immigrating to the United States after 4 years in a Kenyan refugee camp, an experience that few, if any of us in this room could possibly imagine. My family came to America a century before hers, seeking the same safety, security, and opportunity as they fled Russian pogroms targeting Jewish people in Eastern Europe. And my life began by losing my father in the Vietnam War, an American tragedy that may well have been prevented had this very chamber been filled with more voices like Ilhan Omar's. Now, don't get me wrong. Representative Omar and I regularly disagree on policy, both domestic and foreign. And she has at times used words that have caused concern, offense, and even personal pain to me and others. She and I have spoken face to face on those occasions, and she has apologized, and she continues to learn from those missteps. Furthermore, she has never posted a video depicting herself decapitating and killing fellow members of Congress. She doesn't question whether a plane really smashed in to the Pentagon on 9/11. She does not wonder if school shootings in America are staged. She has not propagated the absurd notion that space lasers financed by the Rothschild family are the cause of wildfires in California. She has never equated vaccine mandates with Adolf Hitler. And she has never, ever expressed support for executing leaders of the United States Congress. Now, being a conspiracy theorist alone is not grounds for removal from committees, I'll admit that. But depicting violence or supporting violence against fellow members of Congress is grounds for removal, be it a Democrat or a Republican. But no one has accused Representative Omar of depicting or supporting violence against anyone in this chamber. So why will 90% of Jewish members of the United States House of Representatives vote to maintain her committee assignment? Quite simply, because we believe in the human capacity to learn from mistakes, to make amends, and that atonement should be rewarded, not punished. We also believe that the most dangerous acts by elected officials in a democracy are to silence voices of dissent, even those with which we fundamentally disagree. And that's what this is about, silencing and canceling. How ironic. Furthermore, this is the very weaponization of anti-Semitism that I, as a Jewish person, find repulsive, I find dangerous, and above else, shameful. Yes, shameful. So to my friends across the aisle, if you really are sincere about defeating anti-Semitism in America, how about ask us? How about ask us what we need? And let me assure you, you might be surprised by the answer. I yield back.
Dean Phillips there defending Ilhan Omar and very rightly taking the laundry list of lunacy from the right that the right has rewarded by placing these people in high-level positions at the expense of Ilhan Omar. Now, once again, I'm going to repeat what I think the Democrats should do. If you've ever threatened violence
against anyone else in the House, guess what? You can't be on a committee. And can I make the point that if you did run on that policy, you'd win? If you're sitting there and you're saying, if a Democrat's sitting there and saying to themselves, you know what, I don't know if that's going to be a good thing. I don't want to alienate. No. I think we all can agree that if you are threatening your coworkers, you should be fired, but at least in the very least, you shouldn't get the VIP parking spot. And isn't that exactly kind of what the Republicans are doing here? Taking people that violently threatened other members of the U.S. House and making sure that they've got the executive bathroom key, the luxury parking at the front of the building, the gym membership. No, they should be fired. But because, as I laid out in the 3 o'clock hour, they've created this system to where they could run a turnip next with an R next to its name in a lot of these districts and then still win. You can't dig these ticks out. But at the very least, you can promise that we're not going to let a bunch of belligerent idiots in northwestern Georgia who basically love the racism and Islamophobia and bigotry of Marjorie Taylor Greene have their say on committees that are there. Once again, this is their standard. You're honing it a little bit. If anyone's associating with Nazis, you can't be on a committee. If anyone's threatened anyone, you can't be on a committee. And scene. And yeah, I mean, you probably negate 40 to 50 Republicans. But as Dean Phillips just laid out there, if all you do is come on out there and say, you know what, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done that. Well, I think people would be willing to give you another chance. But the problem here is this. Democrats do apologize when they make a mistake, and then the Republicans demand another pound of flesh. Republicans never apologize, even for the most belligerent, ignorant, insulting, racist, Islamophobic, you know, homophobic things. Never apologize. And then they get rewarded. That crap has to end. That crap has to end. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll wrap up the show when we return. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. I just think it's they're not hiding it anymore. And they're basically, yeah, it's just racism, it's bigotry, it's misogyny, it's Islamophobia. It really is. It's just really disturbing where the Republican Party has gone today. KSTP has put out a story here where it basically tracks the number of abortions, which it's funny. It doesn't surprise me after the abortion debate they put this out, because what you're about to hear kind of contradicts dramatically the Republican talking points on this. Now, for years, I have had Republicans in the state of Minnesota insist billions of abortions happen in Minnesota every year. I said, no, that doesn't sound right. If you go to the Minnesota Department of Health, they track this stuff. It's millions. All right. But these are the same people that say that, you know, unless you're dragging someone feet first out of an abortion clinic, you're really not anti-abortion. I'm like, okay, that's called assault. You don't do that. The Minnesota Department of Health did report that in 2021, there were 10,136 abortions performed in Minnesota. By the way, that is a dramatic decrease to 20 years earlier. It's 40 years earlier. In 1980, the number was 19,028. So that was nearly double. So that's actually 40 years. In 2021, 9,127 abortions were Minnesota residents. About 1,000 were out-of-state residents. That number is going to change. With 634 of those out-of-states coming from Wisconsin.
Examining the ages, once again, and that number will change. Examining the ages of each patient, the largest number of abortions, 2,802, were performed on women between the ages of 25 and 29, 388 between 29 and 40, and patients under 15 were 29. Oh, excuse me, 388 were women over the age of 49. 29 patients were under the age of 15. Reminder, Republicans want that 14-year-old they think that's Christian. Yeah, let's force that 14. Let's force that 13-year-old. Let's force that 12-year-old who might have been raped. Let's force that kid to have a baby because, Jesus, no, that's not how it works. The Minnesota Department of Health also tracks the clinical estimate of the most abortions were performed in the first trimester. 6,975 of them were performed in the first 9 weeks. There was one performed in the 25 to 30 week mark. None were over 31 weeks. But that's not, once again, what did the Republicans try to argue when they were trying to derail the PRO Act? They're trying to say, the only abortions this makes legal are the one where she's starting to have contractions and she says, I don't want this now. And they pull it out and they, for some reason, do horrible things to that. No, that's not what happens. Not in Minnesota. Not in Minnesota. They did ask them the reasons why they got them. Some of them were rape and incest. Some were health complications. The most common reason, 5,499 women reported they just didn't want the child at the time. The second most common reason, they had economic concerns. Over 3,579 women did not give a reason at all. So, but that's between a patient and their doctor. Once again, I think this is good information to have because I think we have to understand as the rest of the world tries their hardest to basically make sure that no woman can make their own decisions about their own health care, that Minnesota is going to become a safe haven for this. And yes, we are about to get a lot of people from North Dakota and South Dakota and Iowa and Wisconsin. And the way things are going, I would not be surprised if we had someone coming from Missouri and all of a sudden we have their attorney general trying to send up Missouri troopers to drag someone back to Missouri and stop them from having an abortion. I think we are going down this path. The reality is that this is the choice of an individual with their own doctor. It is now the law in Minnesota. Thank you to the Democratic leaders in the House and the Senate, as well as the governor. It is why it is not exactly, taking away people's rights is not exactly high on the Republicans' list. It's one of the reasons why I talked a lot about Ilhan Omar, why they're going after, black people and Muslim people and women and the LGBTQ community as well, because they've lost their big social issue, which used to carry them in elections. But the reality is what they described is not what's going on in Minnesota. Courtesy of the numbers that were put out by KSTP. We'll make sure I get that story posted as well. Native Roots Radio, I Am Awake. That's coming up here in the 6 o'clock hour. Thank you very much for being here today. We are back on a Friday. Until then, see ya.